I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. There are two parts of Boston undergoing major changes. We have Downtown Crossing with its huge hole in the ground where Filene's used to be. And we have the Seaport District that's come to life in recent years with restaurants and shops. Both are growing with help from City Hall, but at different paces, some say. Thomas Grillo joins us. He's the real estate editor at the Boston Business Journal. And Anthony Flint also joins us in Studio 3 here with me. He's with the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy. Welcome back.
Great to be here.
Thomas, let me start with you. $3.2 million invested in downtown. So there is a lot of stuff happening. Detail a little bit of what's going to be happening soon. What's kicking off now?
Well, this summer, the city is going to start with repaving some of the streets. They're going to redo some of the sidewalks. They're going to put up more signs. They're going to do some street furniture. They're going to do this over 5 years, so they're not going to spend $3.2 million, you know, over the next 2 months. But they're investing some serious dollars into the area that, you know, Mayor Menino has for many years made that a priority.
But, you know, of course, one of the big things that we're all waiting to find out and want to see happening is dealing with that big old hole that's left there where the Filene's used to be and the abandoned project happened.
Well, Millennium Partners says that they are ready to proceed. They're putting some of the final touches on their financing package, but they are they say they're ready to go and could start construction as early as next spring. So, you know, we could see something happening there very soon.
I just want to point out that Vernado Realty, those are the people, the local developers who who abandoned the Filene's project.
Right.
They are still connected to this. Why shouldn't we be suspicious?
Well, I guess it's good to be suspicious and it's good to question. Millennium Partners is a very, very popular developer in the downtown. They have local roots here, even though they're New York based, but they have an office here. And they did the Ritz-Carlton project across the street. And the mayor has a lot of confidence in them, and he has a very good relationship with them. And he feels very strongly that they're going to make this thing happen.
All right. Well, he wasn't too fond of them at one point, but okay, I guess.
No, he was fond of Millennium, but he hasn't been fond of Vernado, and that remains to be true.
Okay. Part of the package of what is happening with the Millennium project is housing, Anthony, and you're all about the housing being the driver of any rebuilding of a city. Why is that so important?
Well, you know, Boston is in a great position across the country. It's thought of alongside New York and Washington, D.C. and Chicago and San Francisco, Seattle, the kind of city where empty nesters and aging baby boomers are flocking back to the city, different kinds of young professionals and different kinds of businesses. And so Boston's pretty well positioned. It's this particular neighborhood or district of Downtown Crossing could benefit, I believe, from even more people living down there 24/7 to give the place a lot of activity.
In fact, a lot of people, even as they commented on how happy they were to see this $3.2 million project, you know, or investment happening, they were saying, hey, it feels deserted down here because there aren't a lot of people, even as new restaurants are coming back.
Well, it's a question of what can the city do? How can the city make an effective intervention? And this is happening across the country. It's all about placemaking and a distinct special character for a neighborhood like this. I think it's going to take a little bit of starting over, I believe, with getting rid of the pedestrian mall and turning that into a street a little bit more like Newbury Street, where you have cars that can park there if they want to, food trucks, bike sharing racks, make it more like the rest of the city or the South End or the Back Bay. And before you know it, it'll have a much different feel if you take those kinds of steps in terms of urban design.
Well, a couple of questions. One is the housing that thus far is proposed, and this is actually to both of you, seems a little bit pricey. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to have thousands of people trying to live there because, frankly, they can't afford it. Anthony.
Well, there are those who can afford it, and the real estate developers, as Tom knows, are well aware of this. There really is a sizable demographic and clientele for this kind of city living, for downtown living. There must be affordable housing alongside of it, but there is a good deal of capacity that's still available. And as you increase the overall number of homes that are available, you're increasing supply. And so the laws of supply and demand should kick in eventually. Compared to Back Bay, for example, there might be a little bit more affordability in a place like Downtown Crossing, at least at the moment.
What do you think, Thomas?
Well, there's an example of Artstone, which has a very luxurious project, you know, on Lower Washington Street. It's almost 100% occupied, and the rents there start at $2,000 a month for a studio. Mm. I mean, these are not inexpensive units, as you mentioned, but there appears to be, you know, a very large audience for these kind of units.
So what are they drawn to now? The possibility? Because it's, you know, what is being envisioned by this investment hasn't yet occurred.
You know, I don't know if Anthony agrees with me, but my sense is that many of the folks that live in these buildings at the Ritz and at the at Archstone, my sense is that they're really not neighborhood people, that they basically sleep there, and that they may be international travelers. Oh. You know, these are not really the kind of, like, people that might join a neighborhood community group. These are very wealthy individuals who, you know, have work here or have businesses here, and they use that as a place to stay.
Boy, I need a house-sitting gig there, but continue, Anthony.
Well, if you continue to think about the empty nesters and the aging boomers, these are the kinds of residents who would want to walk to the theater, which you can do if you live in Downtown Crossing or at the Ritz or at Archstone, walk to the restaurants are shopping of Beacon Hill to the North End. And so Boston is pretty compact in that area. So I think that even if right out your doorstep, you're not finding the kind of urbane, cosmopolitan environment that you might like to have, steps away, you can find that in spades.
Okay, I want to just point out something, Anthony. You've written about smart city initiatives in cities like Barcelona, and you mentioned that they, you know, paid attention to the street lights and the bus connections, a lot of infrastructure. I noted that in the comments about the improvements being made downtown, a lot of snarky comments about street lights. Well, what's that going to do for me? It's not drawing anybody. I just want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Right. Well, I mean, it's easy to sort of disparage the efforts for this is not a new initiative. This idea of the city somehow trying to goose economic development to pave the way for a revitalized downtown. Again, you know, there are plenty of other cities from Cleveland on down who would love to have a downtown like Downtown Crossing, but still. It's a question of what can the city do? And indeed, infrastructure and being a smart city are some of the steps that can lay the foundation for, along with urban design, for revitalization.
So switching over to the seaport, Thomas Grillo, you have written very recently about some major projects happening down there. And as we've said, restaurants and shops have popped up in recent years. Doesn't seem to be leading in housing yet. But over at the Globe, they think the pace is slow. What say you?
Well, there are 600 units under construction, more than 600 units under construction as we speak. There's going to be a groundbreaking, in fact, on Thursday over at Fort Point. I mean, you know, you have to understand we were coming out of the worst recession since the Depression, and things are finally starting to come together in terms of financing for these projects. And Seaport, to me, looks like Boston's final frontier. It's really coming together. It's taken a while, and no one anticipated this downturn in the economy. But, for example, Joe Fallon, who's building the two Vertex pharmaceutical buildings over on the waterfront, he told me earlier this week that he was ready to proceed with the first of three condo buildings that he wants to build on the water.
Yeah.
And he's very confident that no one right now in the city is building new condos. And he is confident that because of the location, that they will sell.
We've just learned that condo prices are going up, though, Tony.
Right.
You got the last seconds on this, and I mean seconds.
These aren't condos for you and I. These are condos for very, very wealthy people.
Last seconds, Tony. What do you think about Seaport?
Well, the housing is very important, but again, it's what can the city do? And in this case, what the city and state did was provide this incredible infrastructure, and that is what is driving the property values. This Silver Line, the Congress Street interchange for the I-90 connector as part of the big dig, minutes from the airport, this area will be just fine. And what the city doesn't need to do is offer tax breaks to businesses to try to lure them to locate there. There is all kinds of infrastructure and a foundation for commercial and residential activity in the Seaport. I think in a few years, it's going to look pretty darn good.
Well, I can say that Silver Line infrastructure has gotten a lot of my restaurant money over there. So there you go. Thanks to you both.
Thank you for having us.
We've been talking about Downtown Crossing and the Seaport District in Boston with Thomas Grillo, the real estate editor at the Boston Business Journal, and Anthony Flint of the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy. I'm Callie Crossley. Thank you for joining us. Tomorrow we'll be talking to Dr. David Katz about the latest research surrounding obesity. Are carbs the bad guy? Can additives make you fat? Tune in from noon to 2 tomorrow on Boston Public Radio, a production of WGBH.